Chapter 9. The Prince of Crows. He had to admit, even if only to himself, that this was one of his less wise ideas. No amount of biological enhancement, nor even the most advanced suit of Maximus Pattern power armor, could shield him from the gravitational forces pressing against him. He felt nausea for the first time in over a century, which was novel enough to make him grin. The pressure against his skull and limbs, however, was less entertaining. The suspensor wire pressure flight suits worn by Tay and her crew shared some basic functionality with one of the layers in his own ceramite armor, but it didn't render him immune to physics. Having skinned and flayed countless humans, as well as warriors from 5 different legions, including his own, he suspected the feeling of inertial forces threatening to pull his bones apart was fairly approximate on the continuum of pain. Stark lascannon beams flensed his vision, each one a rapid spear that defied his eye lens's attempts to fade and counter the brightness. Tay's fighter swayed and swung beneath him. He could feel her doing her best to coax performance from the Wrath without shaking him loose or killing him with any wrenching maneuvers. Even so, as the black towers slashed past either side and the battlements below became a blurring, queasy road, he came close to cursing the idea as a rash move. But then, that would be admitting he'd been wrong. Sevatar snorted at the notion. We can't have that now. The stars tumbled across the sky as Tay rolled again. Sevatar's one concession to the insanity of his plan was to grunt once, quietly, with his head aching from the acid of dizziness. That also was novel. His genetic implants had left him almost immune to disorientation these past decades. He felt Tay ease back on the speed, winding and weaving to dodge the pyrotechnic storm of turret fire from below. He knew she'd never be able to reach a dead stop, but slowing enough to lessen his momentum would be more than enough. A few bruises and broken bones would be easier to bear than being pulped against the invincible Reason's armor plating. But her arc carried him over the spinal castles, across the bow, and he finally realized what she was doing. "This is even stupider than my idea," he voxed to her. Her voice was tight, tense, her attention anywhere but on him. "Your way will see you smeared across the hull. My way, you get to play hero." The fighter drifted into the landing bay, retros flaring to slow down. Servitor crews immediately stood straighter, dead eyes and refocusing eye lenses tracking the craft's approach. Scorch marks darkened the hull in place of paint, and its insignias were similarly bleach-burned into vague nothingness. The closest munitions officer was a man by the name of Halles Korevi, and he was directing a loader team to rearm this latest in an endless stream of landing and redeploying fighters, when it jinked above the deck and shot him to pieces with a volley of roaring blue energy from its las cannons. Internal fire teams opened up on the drifting Wrath, naval armsmen discharging wide-mouthed shot cannons that had little hope of hitting a moving target. An armored figure rose from the fighter's back, a bolter in one hand and a spear in the other. He fired down as he ran along the back-swept wing, 4 bolts bursting in the chests of 4 armsmen, spreading viscera across their fellows. Shot cannon fire still clattered against his midnight blue ceramite, leaving ignorable silver scratches on the dark plate. He reached the end of the wing and jumped clear. The fighter's engines whined louder, firing the moment his boots left the wing. In a burst of engine wash, she was gone, leaving a sonic boom and the alkaline stink of lascannon discharge in her wake. The figure landed hard in a crouch, boots sinking twin dents into the iron deck. Atop the spear, a meter-long chain blade started chewing the hangar's cold air. The armsmen, to their credit, moved into cover and kept firing, despite never training to face a warrior of the Legiones Astartes. Sevatar twitched twice, flinching as the spreading flak rattled against his armor. Irritating bastards. Retinal warnings trailed and flashed across his vision, and his armor's auto-senses kept pulling at his left arm, trying to raise his bolter to fire at the humans in cover. He locked the bolt gun to his thigh, and the moment he rose from his knees, he started running, not towards them, but heading for the massive open doors leading deeper into the ship. The temptation to waste yet more time and carve them limb from limb was almost too strong to swallow. "You get to live," he growled, ignoring their continued fire. "I have bigger prey." As he plunged into the siren-lit corridors, making up the Invincible Reason's hollow veins, he tuned into First Company's VoxWeb, no longer denied access by distance. "Ladies," he greeted them, still sprinting. "Where in the hell have you been?" spat back the first voice. Several others joined in, sharing the same sentiment. "You have no idea," Sevatar replied. "Where is the Primarch?" "Engaged at the fifth..." Sevatar shoulder-barged through a crowd of black-robed menials, stumbling over their tangled limbs and carelessly shattering their bones beneath his boots. Up and running a second later, he swore across the vox. "Repeat that," he said. "Some fools got in my way." "The Primarch is engaged at the 15th Concourse," Valzen replied. "Half of us are here with him." The 15th Concourse. Sevatar knew the STC Gloriana pattern battleship as well as he knew the contours of his own armor. The Nightfall was born of the same breed. "Well, that's madness," he voxed back. "You'll be encircled by every Dark Angel left alive on the ship. There's nowhere to run." Valzen's answer was interrupted by a shriek over the vox and the knocking grind of a bone saw doing what it did best. "We are aware of that, sir." "I'll be there in 7 minutes," promised Sevatar. 8 if there's resistance. 9 if the resistance is carrying bolters." The resistance was carrying bolters. Laying siege to an enemy warship was always a clash of contrasts. Corridor by corridor, chamber by chamber, an attacker could spend half an hour encountering no enemy presence at all beyond confused serfs and slaves, before promptly spending the same span of time needing to fight for every footstep of ground, killing through squad after squad of dug-in defenders. A Gloriana battleship was the size of a densely compacted city, and accordingly populated, not only by officers and expert crew, but by a slave caste numbering tens of thousands of souls. Most were consigned to live in the warship's lightless bowels, breathing poorly ventilated air and furnace fumes, but many still saw service on the upper decks. Sevatar chewed through them with barely a hitch in his stride. His chain glaive ticked and stuttered, clogged with meat after only a few minutes. Those humans, too brave or foolish to flee, met their ends in a whir of eviscerating machine teeth, torn apart or left deformed and ignored in his wake. 100 of the 8th Legion's best warriors had teleported aboard in full Terminator war gear. The trail of their devastation was almost hilarious in its absolute severity. On more than one deck, Sevatar's boots splashed through a marsh of shallow blood and carved human meat. But the Dark Angels weren't beaten, not even close. Even with the Atramentar sweeping these decks clear, reinforcements were flooding in from other parts of the ship, storming their way to the Strategium to defend their Primarch. "Not that he needs defending," Sevatar mused. Not if the last time they'd met was anything to go by. He'd killed 7 Dark Angels already. One of them ended life as a trophy, the warrior's helm now chained to Sevatar's belt. No higher honour for an enemy of the 8th Legion. In such remembrance, they paid respect to their fallen foes. At the junction ahead, another 3 Dark Angels in pale tabards over their heraldic black held the line, bolters kicking in their fists. Sevatar crouched behind the relative cover of a corner, reloading his own weapon, lip curling as he crunched home his last magazine. He could kill them up close easily enough, but putting a bolter in his hands evened the odds in a way he never enjoyed. He hadn't lied when he told Trez he was 8th Legion to his core. Just like his brothers, he'd never cherished a fair fight. Sport was one thing, but it hardly compared to hunting prey. In that, at least, he was made in his Primarch's image. He risked a glance around the corner, pulling back as a shell detonated close to his faceplate, showering him in debris.
"It's Savitar!"
he could hear them shouting to each other. "It's the first captain! I saw him!" He grinned as he imagined the silhouette he cast in his armour, with the sweeping dark iron wings rising from his helm. "This accursed helmet crest," he thought. "His enemies always recognised him by it." The gunfire fell silent. He heard strangled grunts and the clanging wallops of weapons striking Ceramite. Emerging from cover, he broke into a run, joining the melee. Alastor Ruchal, clad in the same black as the Dark Angels he was killing, nearly died first. Sevatar's retinal display locked onto him with the Nostraman rune for threat blinking bright, registering his Raven Guard armor and the thundering meteor hammer spinning in his fists. The first captain turned, lancing his glaive through the last angel's back, letting the hungry teeth do their work. He ended the downed warrior with a boot stamped onto the angel's throat. The blood patterning his armour went ignored, as did the bodies at his feet. One of them reached a weak hand to scrape strengthless fingers along his boots. Sevatar drew his bolter and fired downwards, without even bothering to look.
"You won't believe how I got here," he said to Ruchal.
The raven didn't reply. He hadn't replied to anything since Istvan V. It was difficult to speak without a tongue. The vox devolved into a choking mess of cries as he drew closer. Decades of listening to overlaying vox chatter and deciphering the stream of runic updates on his eye lenses stole the mystery of what he was about to see. But the majesty of the moment still struck hard. Breathless, his armour scarred, Sevatar tore through into the 15th Concourse, one of many thoroughfare hubs on the upper command decks. Dead serfs had decorated the tunnels on his way here, but the scale of the massacre taking place invited a rare laugh from his lips. Digital figures and flatline readouts had nothing on the reality. The Atramentar and the Night Lords from the Excoriator were knee-deep in the dead, fighting amidst the piling bodies of serfs, servitors, armsmen, dark angels, and their own slain brothers. They fought back-to-back in diminishing circles, fighting to the last against a tide of dark angels' reinforcements advancing from adjacent tunnels. He'd never seen a weaker last stand in a less defensible position, but the reason was clear enough. Here the Primarchs had met, so here the battle raged. The two sons of the Emperor duelled above the warring crowds, above the crashing of bolters and the thwarted screeching of chain blades against Ceramite. Their embattled children, screaming and bleeding and dying below them, were shadows in the wake of gods. For the first time since Istvan V, Sevatar saw his genetic forebear rise to reclaim the glory he'd once possessed in abundance. No one could ever claim Lord Conrad Kurz was regal, nor could they describe him as handsome, dignified, or even healthy. His glory was starved and sickly. His majesty was cold and cadaverous. Sickle-shaped silver claws scythed out from the tip of each armoured finger, every one of them dancing with coruscating energy lighting. He moved, not as some avatar of liquid grace, but as a jerking puppet controlled by an unseen malicious sentience, forcing this cadaverous god to dance to a tune inciting spasm over joy. Sevatar had seen several Primarchs fight, shedding blood in anger, and their raw lethality was beautiful to behold. Each one of them flowed through the dance of war, even Angron in his uncontrolled theatrics of tormented rage. Kurz did not share that trait. His movements were faster, jerkier stutters, too swift for the eye to follow, between moments of unnerving serenity. Each heartbeat of calm lasted just long enough to convince the witness it was real, before the laughing murderer moved back into his twitching, killing paroxysm. This was Sevatar's father, as he'd been in the years after first taking the mantle of Primarch. a creature of gaunt limbs, hollow cheeks and sunken eyes, fueled by some bleak energy, brightening his gaze with the promise of dark fire. Lank, black hair flowed across his shoulders, washed by the random spray of foe's blood, and never anything more. His smile was a gruesome flourish of filed teeth between the whitest, thinnest lips. Sevatar had seen Kurz fight Korax on the killing fields of the Dropsite massacre, when the Raven Guard Primarch was exhausted by hours of battle and drained by the infecting truth of betrayal. He'd seen his Primarch duel the Lion twice, first in the dust of a fortress's foundations on distant Sigwalsa, and again only weeks before, fighting for less than 60 seconds in the reign of a world that held no value at all. Here, for the first time, his father was locked in a fair fight. No low blows to begin with, no assaulting a weakened or demoralized foe, no attacking from surprise with the gravity of a devastating ambush. The Lion's movements were clinical, a ruthless economy of muscle and motion, each thrust and parry executed to perfection without the audacity of dramatic flair. Kurz's jerk string assault was a flailing of clawed hands, each potential embrace blocking the long blade one moment and being turned aside by it the next. It was the sound of Rushal's meteor hammer that dragged Sevatar back to himself, tearing his eyes away from the spark-shedding divinities trying to kill each other on the platform above. The Raven whirled his flail in a heavy propeller blade circle, idling in a whoosh of ionized air. Blood sizzled on the mace head hanging from the end of the chain, its energy field burning all gore away into foul-smelling steam. The Raven pointed with his free hand. Warriors in armor as black as his own were still running in from the 20 corridors opening out into this transit hub of hanging chains and raised gantries. Sevatar vaulted a railing, dropping down another level, smashing boots first into a melee in which several of his Terminator brothers were outnumbered by Dark Angels. The first foe went down, his head severed by a single sweep of the first captain's chain glaive. The second lost a hand, then most of his face. The third and fourth dropped from being disemboweled in the same swing. It was happening again. Was he faster than everyone else? Or were they slower? Every enemy he faced betrayed themselves in the subtlest ways. He saw a tension in the joints of their armor, each one a premonition of where their next blow would come from. Sevatar blocked them all with the ease of a soldier seeing every strike coming, lashing back before they could retaliate. It wasn't happening again. It was worse than ever before. Or better. Lactic acid burned his muscles, and the pressure behind his eyes threatened to break his skull from within. But each beat of his heart made everyone move slower and slower. He took a chainsword against the haft of his spear, and had time to spin, teeth clenched, to ram his glaive through the chest of a tabarded paladin behind him, before turning back to catch the first Dark Angel's next blow. As he did, he saw the minuscule adjustment in balance, signifying the exact angle of his enemy's next attack. Sevatar impaled him before the move even began, standing face to face with the dying warrior as the chain glaive hewed its way through the other warrior's innards. Blackness edged across his retinal display. It took several seconds to realize it wasn't blood in his helm, but a stain physically darkening his eyes. Something popped in his skull, something rupturing with a wet, bursting gush of fluid. His own life signs, scrawled across his eye lens readout, twitched no differently from the Primarch's jagged fury. He could hear his brothers shouting his name now. They thought he'd been wounded, and he wasn't sure they were wrong. Trez's warning scalded its way through his mind's eye, as if the words were written in fire upon flesh, rather than recalled through memory's voice.
"This will probably kill you, Jago. You have the strength for this, but not the control. There's no going back from this. If you unlock the gift you fought so hard to forget, some doors cannot be closed."
He staggered, down to one knee, using the fall to cleave the legs out from the closest archangel. The warrior cried out, dying a heartbeat later, with Sevatar's glaive through his chestplate.
"I might be dying," he thought, and started laughing.
"Valzen!"
someone was screaming.
"Valzen! Sevatar's down! Apothecary!"
He turned his head to see Rushal standing above him, a sentinel in absolute black. The raven swung his meteor hammer, the arc ending in a burst of lethal light as it cracked the helm of yet another dark angel. The warrior of the First Legion went down in silence, because everything was silent now. Rushal's meteor hammer no longer boomed with every impact. Sevatar's own erratic life signs no longer whined warnings at him. His world wasn't a chaotic storm of thudding boots, detonating bolt rounds and wrenching armor joints. It was, somehow, serene. Sevatar vomited into his helm, forced to choke on his own bile because he couldn't stop laughing. And then he was home. Home. The city at night. The rooftop where he came to hide. The sunless world hadn't burned in his Primarch's misguided, futile rage after all. He was home, standing in the promise of rain before the true storm, and the pressure in his head was just as it had always been as a child, threatening to bubble over into a fit that would leave him shaking.
"Food! Food! Food!"
they called at him. He turned to them, where they pecked at the rock-crete rooftop and fluttered their ragged feathers.
"Bye! Bye! Bye!"
they cackled.
"Food! Food! Food!"
And,
"Now! Now! Now!"
Jago reached into his pockets, offering a handful of breadcrumbs.
"Come,"
he said to the crows. "Food for tonight."
"Flesh! Flesh! Flesh!"
they called back. He laughed as several of the black birds landed on his shoulders and outstretched arm.
"Flesh," he agreed. "Flesh soon. Breadcrumbs now."
"Flesh now! Flesh now!"
He let them complain as they took the breadcrumbs, each chunk pebble-hard and stale.
"Flesh now," he said to them once they were finished. "Wait."
He wasn't gone long, but he was dizzy and sweating by the time he returned. Dragging the other boy's body up the stairs left his arms sore and stretched.
"Flesh! Flesh! Flesh!"
the crows called. Jago dropped the dead boy's ankles and sat down, catching his breath.
"Flesh," he replied.
"Save me some," he said to the birds as they flocked down onto the corpse.
"Yes, boy,"
they kept cackling.
"Yes, yes, yes. Save some for the boy."
"You can have the eyes," he told them. "I don't like the eyes."
They croaked crow laughter at this oldest of jokes between them. They knew the boy never ate the eyes. He tried once, and the meal had made him see things. The boy bled sweet man-blood from his nose and ears for hours and slept all night, twitching on the stone. Jago sat in silence while they ate, listening to the flutter of dark wings and enjoying the brush of mangy feathers against his cheeks. No other sound ever soothed him. No other feeling ever took away the headaches long enough for him to sleep.